Okay, today is Sunday, August 30th, 2015. We're at Gris Kollel, Yerushalayim, and we're beginning a very unique year for me. This year I will only use Heinz products, 57 varieties, and this is my 57th year that I open today teaching Torah. I'm quoting the Gemara in Brachot, "Nisatoma huamei hiratzomu fenecha adonai Elohai velohei avotai shelo ya'era devat hakalal yadi velo yikal shel bedevat lacha chas v'shalom v'yismuchu v'chaberi shelo ama al hatamei taha velo ala tahar tamei velo ala mutar sa velo ala asua muta velo yikal shlu chaberai bedevat halacha v'yismach mahen ki adonai yiten chachma mipiv datu tfuna gal einai v'abita niflaot mitoratecha. And halavai that tefillah should be mitkayemet. One word about the course. Anyone who needs supplementary rabbinic credit, by simply attending you get that credit. But I just want to make clear, something happened with the Kollel. As David Miller says, I was too nice a guy. And someone who had attended some lectures and then was too busy with Yoredeya, so he asked my permission to listen to the recordings and pass the course, and I said yes. So one permission led to another, and we got an email from New York, and as Reb David says, if we wind up giving credit for listening to the audios or listening to the website, we'll wind up without any students. But to me, that's the least problem. The problem that's more important is that Torah is a Torah Shebaal Peh. And what makes my ability to sit in front of you is simply the fact that for so many years I sat next to the Rav. And if we don't have that ongoing living tradition, then we don't have the real Torah U'Mesorah. So I just want to make clear, I don't want anyone to ask me for credit anymore listening to the website. The history of the course is very simple. When the Kollel began, the students asked me, I write about this in Washington, so I can be very brief. The students asked me to teach, and I looked around and I saw Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein is giving a shiur in Gemara. At that time, one of the Dayanim was giving a shiur in Halacha, one of the Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, to be more exact. So I said, what can I give a shiur in? So I took my learning and my doctorate and combined them and went into the world of Shelet HaTshuvot, and as they say, the rest is history. Until today, I've never repeated a shiur, beginning with 78 on in the Kollel when the formal program began. And some of my classic shiurim this year, Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope, L'Vareich Al HaMugmar, and we'll have a volume dealing with some of the burning issues of Dini Ishut, which were based upon the shiurim I gave him this very Kollel. So today I just want to finish out what we did all of last year, all of the last 2 years, when we spent two entire years on a Reuven. And then from a Reuven, I want to go into a new world that will need 120 years to do properly, but we have to begin, and the rest is in the Ribbono Shel Olam's hands. Now, finishing out a Reuven, I want to mention two very interesting volumes that came out over the summer. One of them is available for sale, one of them the author has to give you, and it's unbelievable what new information surfaces. My student, a very well-known student, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, published a volume, Changing the Immutable, How Orthodox Judaism Rewrites Its History. Some of you probably are familiar with the volume, and a lot of it was on websites before. So a Rav in New York who studied in Lakewood for many years asked me, am I shocked by the volume? He was very obsessed in this volume. Mark, Professor Shapiro, takes on Art Scroll for their revision of the Rashbam. And the revision of the Rashbam is a very serious matter. How Art Scroll can take a Rishon and be selective, what to publish, what not to publish. So this rabbi, this Lakewood graduate, was shocked that a Wagyu guy is not thyself. No, that time I said I didn't go for the gas pipe over that. For one simple reason, I said I knew all about it from the websites. But what I found amazing in Mark, and what to me was the most important part of this volume, if you take the volume and you go, I see he doesn't have the pages here, it's a photograph. I photographed it, I xeroxed it, but he here, I see, this is his, he photographed the original, and there's no pagination. But I'll tell you what it's about. It's Reb Moshe Feinstein, a tshuva, b'inyan halicha b'makel b'shabbos v'yom tov l'suma u'ladam shekasha lo leilech zulato. It's a question that Reb Moshe received about a man who is legally blind, very difficult for him to walk alone, and he has to take a cane. Can he use the cane on Shabbat? All right, a very interesting question. Reb Moshe is not the first one to get it, but in the original publication of the use of a walking stick on the Sabbath, the original tshuva was published in the Am HaTorah Journal in 1986. In that journal, let me read the she'elah to you. I'll emphasize the key words. B'inyan she'eletcha adot eisi isha suma b'borough park. Hashem yishlach refu shlema. Imuteret leilech b'makel B'Rishut HaRabim B'Shabbat. No? Tell me, where's Borough Park located? In Brooklyn. And Rav Moshe says in the tshuva that when it comes to carrying on Shabbat, we all know there's no Rishut HaRabim B'Zman Chazer. And he take, well, you know what he means, that all the kulot we spoke about last year, that you wind up, even in the biggest city, you wind up that you don't have a reshut to rab, and you basically have a kamel. Everything we spoke about, I don't want to repeat 2 years worth of work, but this is exactly like Rav Menashe Klein. So, all right, Rav Moshe can have chumras, which he admits himself that when it comes to the whole she'elah and Erev, he has chumras that not everyone agrees with. But the fact that he's writing a tshuva like this about Borough Park, Reb Menashe Klein is dancing on the table. Aye, when the tshuva was finally published in the Igrot Moshe, and you'll get all the sources, you'll open up Mark's book, when it's finally published in the Igrot Moshe, Volume 5, Tshuva 19, published in 1996. That's 10 years after Rav Moshe's death. Well, you read the same question, except two words are missing. B'inyan, Masha Sha'alto, Dot Isha, Suma, Shem Yishlach, Rav Shlein, B'mcheira, Imuteret Leilech, B'machil, B'reshut HaRabim, B'Shabbat. What two words are missing? Borough Park. So what Mark Shapiro uncovered there, I have to say, gives it's, you know, when you have a boxing fight, they score points. It gives points to Reb Menashe Klein.
Did you say that in the Igros Moshe,
it does not have the word Borough Park. Could you imagine they took the original, and you know, when you see, when you do something like that, the world can trace you down. Look, I'll interrupt for 1 second. By the way, to the new students, I'm not. Next week I form a class list. I just want to be sure you want to come back and you want to live with me and live with my Rebbe who's sitting right next to me, Maria Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. My classes are a little. They're not just Rakefet speaking. But anyway, coming back here, what's amazing is, you see, God have mercy, a kid walked into here about 10, 15 years ago from Arsameach, a very, very bright kid from the coast who was a wild animal in high school. And he told me he would have been a gangster, he would have been on drugs, he would have been a warlord, he would have been mafia, and he turned to Torah. And he winds up a Baal Tshuva, and he was, and he and his, he came in with his chafrita. They had been listening to my shiurim on the website. And by the way, I apologize. I have to say hello to all my virtual talmidim who are listening. I want to wish you well, and I'm well aware. I see you right in front of me as I speak. Back here. So this kid comes in, and you know, in our sameach, the kid is going to Ayu, the kid is going to Rakefet Sheyura. They're not exactly happy. So this kid, whatever the lecture was, I think it was, I still was on my 22 years on the Rub, so it may be 20 years ago that he came in. And I mentioned, when I was talking about the Rav, I was dealing with how he became a Mizrachist after being an Agudist for so many years. And I was speaking about how Aguda was organized in America. And, you know, I've published a great deal about this. And I mentioned that the Rav was on the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. So this kid goes back to Ar Sameach, and he tells them, and he shows them in Suva Yerim, I have it. They are, Rakefet doesn't know what he's talking about. He made it up. So this kid asked me what my source is. I told him, look at the footnote. It's in the Hapardes. So most young people, you tell them where you got the source from. They're not going to check it out. This kid checked it out and went to the library and Xeroxed Hapardes from 1941 and went back to Ar Sameach. I want you to know this kid today has a blog against Kol HaTorah Kulo. He's a big atheist, and I try to reach out to him. I'm not ashamed. I've tried to reach out to a number of students of mine who went way, way, way off the path. And it all goes back to that Rebbe in Ar Sameach who told him the Rebbe Rakefet is making it up. I mean, there's a source. It can be checked out. You can't lie today. Here you take a tshuva and that was published originally in a Yarchon Torani, and you leave out the words Borough Park, Ein HaMikra Hazeh Umeh Eladosheni. So, be it as it may, score a point for Rav Menashe Klein. And whoever edited the volume that came out after Reb Moshe's death, I believe it was Reb Mordechai Tendler, take off a point. Now, but I have something else to show you. If you remember, at the end of the year, the last the Sheyura, so I summarized everything and I said, look, if you're a Litvak, you can be Machmir and not be Samachan and Erev, but you have to make clear you're being machmer. You know, we've spent so much time in the Bir Halacha and the Shmir Chamt Kilchata. I mean, I don't want to repeat 2 years' worth of Shurim now. But I said if you're a Pelisha, Yesh Ami L'smoch, the Mishkanot Yaakov. But if you're an Ungarisha, you absolutely have to be Samachan the Cheta. And I remember I showed you the Tshuva from the Chatam Seifa, where the Chatam Seifa rips the heck out of his Talmud, who is hesitant to be Samachan a Cheta, and he implies that the Talmud is either an Apikoros or an Amaretz. Now, I'll mention a name that most of you never heard of, but you should hear of him. He's not a youngster anymore. He's hitting 90. Wonderful, wonderful individual, Rabbi Doctor Professor Aaron Kirschenbaum. Anyone recognize the name? No. So Aaron Kirschenbaum, he was a typical American kid, grew up in a home like my year, very similar, where there was some Yiddishkeit, no concept of halacha, but the home was Jewish. And he wound up at the seminary. And there was a girl he was friendly with from Zionist activities. And this girl came from a rabbinic Litvish background. And after many years of friendship, it blossomed into love, and they married. And he winds up now at the seminary studying with Professor Shaul Lieberman. He later teaches at the seminary. I know him because when I studied with the Rav, it was towards my later years with the Rav. The Rav's reputation started building up, and you didn't have like today when you have the internet, anyone can listen to you. They don't have to come to shir. In those days, the only way you could hear the Rav was by coming to shir. So Mr. Abrams, who ran the yeshiva, got a little upset. There are too many guys in the room. You know, we never heard of something. When I went into the Rav shir, there were 30 guys there. That was it. And within a few years, he had 50, 55. So Abrams comes in one day, and the Rav says, Mr. Abrams wants to make order. Who is here? Why are you here? Who belongs? Who doesn't belong? And they start calling attendance. And the Rav says, fine, you know, Rothkopf, yeah, that's my student, fine, and this one, that. Then you get to a name, a guy who snuck in from Rabbi Gerelich's year. They threw him out, head first. So then they get to Kirshenbaum, and they ask him, who are you? He says, Rebbe, I teach at the seminary, I'm a seminary graduate, and I came to hear Torah from the Rav. The Rav says, Kirshenbaum, you're my special guest. And he couldn't be thrown out, you understand? He already remained. He later becomes a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a tremendous Tzaddik Yesod Olam. He's lived in Israel. He actually came in Aliyah 2 days before we did, long before many of you were born, 69. And I taught he has a large family. I taught one of his daughters at Michala, one of my earliest classes in Michala in 71. I believe she was already was in that class. And he has a very interesting family today. His two sons, who began in what the Sachs family established in the West Side, a yeshiva katana, I think it's called. You can correct me. It's still on the West Side until today. It rivals Manhattan Day School, but it's much more yeshivish than Manhattan Day School. So his two sons started there. Everyone lives in Israel today. They're very big talmidei chachamim, absolutely in the Haredi world. His daughters, I believe, there are four daughters. They all were educated within the Tzioni Dati world, and they're very strong Tzionim Datiyim. So it's like he has two separate families, but Baruch Hashem, they all get along. Anyway, having given you the background, professor, and he was professor at Tel Aviv U for many decades, Mishpat Ivri. Again, I can't go into what that is exactly. I spoke about it in the Monday class maybe 30 years ago in great detail. But Mishpat Ivri, you have to be a big Talmud Chacham, and he's also a lawyer, and he's trying to show how with Mishpat Ivri we can integrate the halakha and contemporary jurisdiction or jurisprudence and create a legal system for Israel that will be based upon Mekorot and yet be able to function in the Western world. Professor Alon, Mate Alon's father, Menachem Alon, was the greatest person ever. His three volumes, Mishpat Ivri, are beyond comprehension how fabulous they are. So now, in his old age, his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, everyone asked him to write an autobiography. So he wrote a fabulous autobiography, which is not available for sale. He has to give it to you. Ben Yashan V'Chadash, Chayim Emuna U'Mechkar Ba'America U'B'Yisrael. So he writes about his years teaching the seminary, his relationship with of course, Professor Reb Shaul Lieberman, and the whole story with the seminary and the women rabbis and how they ultimately all had to leave and how disappointed he is today. But what's very fascinating is his relationship with Professor Lieberman. And he says the seminary, as you know, had a minyan with a machitza, a 100% frum minyan. That minyan is very, very important, as I've told you more than once, with the Utopia Parkway Jewish Center. When the downstairs minyan, who were members of the shul, took over the whole shul, so one woman went to court that she contributed money with her husband for so many decades, and it was a public trust conservative synagogue. So they proved to the judge that the shul can still be conservative even though it has a mechitza. And the proof was that the seminary, and you know, they said to the judge, this is the leading institution of the conservative movement, there was a minyan with a mechitza, and the judge ruled in favor of the Orthodox group that took over the shul, and as they say, the rest is history. Now, he at that minyan, he once got a call that the minyan has to, it's to chazek et ha-minyan, he was davening elsewhere every morning, He said, the minyan is shvach, and they want the faculty members who live in Manhattan to daven shakras at that minyan, and afterwards they'll have breakfast in the seminary cafeteria. So he said the greatest advantage of that minyan was that he could meet with Reb Shaul Liebman after davening, and all the other members of the faculty went to the cafeteria and had breakfast and gossiped and spoke to each other. Reb Shaul Liebman from the minyan ran back to his study, back to work on the Tosefta Kepshuta. If he drank a cup of coffee, it was while he was working. So he would walk Liebman back to his office. So he reveals two conversations here. One conversation is, and it's typical Liebman. He, remember, we spoke about him many times. Very few words. Alitvak, he was the Chazon Ish's first cousin. He had no use for Agadah, and no use for Kabbalah, and no use for mysticism. His world was purely Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. So one time they're walking back, and they're talking about that in Cincinnati, there was a gabbai of a big Orthodox shul, and in the morning minyan, when they didn't have a kohen, he would always call on Kirshenbaum to get the first aliyah. Kirshenbaum was a Levi, and he felt there was no kohen, you can call a Levi. Now, you're familiar with this problem. It's not so simple if you can call a Levi. Look into the Mishnah Berurah, because people think he's a kohen, or you. But the Gemara says, nitparda hachabila. Those are the words of the Gemara. When there's no coin, do whatever you want. So when he told the story to Kirshenbaum, to Professor Liebman, Professor Liebman looks at him and says, Kirshenbaum, why are you telling me such a story? So it's an open Gemara, Nitpadar Chavila. So Kirshenbaum says, sentiment. The Gabbai had a certain sentiment, at least call a Levi. And Liebman says, Kirshenbaum, be careful about the sentiments of an Am Haaretz. You follow? That's one little story. The other one is with Erev. Exactly what the Chatam Sofer said in a long tshuva, Professor Liebman said in 5-6 words. When the machloket broke out over the Erev in Manhattan, so Kirshenbaum asked Professor Liebman, Rebbe, what do you think about the opposition? What's going on? The machloket. So Professor Liebman said, an Erev, anyone who opposes it is either an Am Haaretz or an Apikoyres. And with that, he walked into his office and back to his research. So what the Chatam Sofer said in the long tshuva, what the Rosh already, the Gedolei Yishayim said in the long tshuva, Professor Liebman said in 4 or 5 words, he's either an Am Haaretz or an Apikoyres. Okay, Ad Kan Eruvin, we did justice, I hope, Be'ezrat Hashem, and you can do as you wish, but it's a very fascinating sugya, Eruvin, from Torah Shebal Peh, from the Gemara, all the way down to today, and as you know, Machleket on top of Machleket, those who carry, those who don't, but Halacha L'maisa, Yesh Amil Smoch, if an Eruv is built properly, and even in the big cities, with all the kula today of what is Rishut HaRabim and the way big cities are built and the buildings and the Chazon Ish, Reb Moshe is absolutely right. It's very hard to find the Rishut HaRabim, the Oraita. And now let me begin, Be'ezrat Hashem, a new world. As I told you 2 years ago, I was always tantalized by the question of Eruvin because I knew a little bit about it, like anyone who learned through Shas, and you go to Yeshiva, and you know, Shabbat, and you're in the rabbinate, so you know a little bit about Eruvin. But I could never understand why it was such a bitter machloket, and it caused such enmity. I don't have to tell you, Eruvin were ripped down in Flatbush, in Golders Green. I saw a sign with my own eyes that if you're Samach on the Erev, you can't have an Aliyah. That's in the, what they call monk's shul. I saw that with my own eyes. And I heard stories from London how deep the machlokes was, that a man once walked in with a cane, and they gave him an Aliyah. When the rabbi found out, he made them do the whole laning over again, that you're not Yotzei if someone was called up to the Torah who came in with a cane in London on Shabbos when there was an Erev already. So when I did my work, my learning, preparing the Shayurim, of course, when you get involved in a Rebbe, you get involved in Brooklyn, you have to get involved with Menashe Klein. And I did get involved with Menashe Klein, and for years and years I studied his Tshuvot, and ultimately he just drew me so close, this individual, his knowledge, his broadness, his narrow-mindedness, his background, his being saved from the Holocaust, what he did in America, who he was friendly with, his ability to answer every question. He didn't select Reb Moshe by the 70s for sure, maybe even the late 60s, was surrounded by people who censored what he could answer, what he shouldn't answer. Reb Menashe Klein answered everyone from the Eid HaRedit to the whole yeshiva university scene. And I found this tshuvah, the way he writes, and as a chassid, as someone raised in a different world than the Litvish world, or the Sephardic world, or the purely Ungarish world. His tshuvah, not just had halacha, had musa, had hashkafa, had chassidic stories. The man had a world to him. I never met Reb Menashe Klein. I left America in 69, came in Aliyah. He was not well known at the time. He was a youngster yet. Times that I've been in Borough Park, I was at his shul, saw his shul. It's very well known in Borough Park because it's built outside, resembling the Kotel of HaMaravi on one side and Kever Rachel on the other side. And then I've already been, I think I even spoke in his shul in Ramat, which was built, we'll see later who put up the money for it. And I went to the website and I typed in on Facebook, my students here in the Kollel, David Katz, a number of years ago, taught me how to use a computer. I was total ignorant of a computer, an ignoramus. And he taught me how to use it, and I typed into Google Rabbi Menashe Klein, and you get on Facebook videos of him. And one video, I was moved to tears. He died a few years ago. He was meeting with a group of Balei Tshuva in Ramat, and you could see the awe, how they looked at him. You could see the love he generated towards them. And it was fascinating. They were speaking Hebrew. And when he didn't know the word in Hebrew, Reb Menashe Klein, Yiddish is his native language, obviously, and he knows English perfectly. But his Hebrew is good, but not perfect. So he would say the word in English, and his Gabbai would translate into Hebrew. And it was just so moving for me. So what I did, if you notice in the Beis Medrash, there are 18 volumes of his Shelet and Tshuvot dedicated in memory of my parents, Zichronon Levracha. I bought them for Gris. And I went through all 18 volumes, every last line. And I Xeroxed, I picked out a few hundred Tshuvot that I felt very fascinating for us in the world in which we live today. And I try to organize it into four divisions, Lefi Chdalet Chalkei HaShulchan Aruch. It's not always easy to do that because many times the tshuva may have more than just something in that particular division, and he doesn't divide it up either, basically. So the tshuvot flow. So I did the best I could. All right, now let me begin. To come out with the biography of Reb Menashe Klein, not so simple. There are contradictions in the sources. His years are 1923 to 2011. His father was a Rav in the vicinity of Ungvar. That was the community. I believe that Ungvar, when we speak of Ungvar, we're talking the Czechoslovakian area. It's beyond Hungary. It's in Czechoslovakia, maybe a little bit closer to Eastern Europe. And this was the area in which he grew up. He was very close to the Ingvar Rav. He studied there, and they wanted him to become, already in the late 30s, the Rav of Ingvar of that area. The war came upon him, and I don't have to tell you the tragedies of World War II, and his whole life was uprooted. Now, his closest friend, and I'll give you a fascinating source in a few minutes, his closest friend was Elie Wiesel. And here you'll see contradictory reports. Did they know each other before the Holocaust? Did they just meet in the death camp? Did they just become friendly in France? I get contradictory memoirs. It seems to me, on the basis of what I've been able to put together, that they first met in Buchenwald, I believe it was, in the death camp. They were both Iluyim, both very bright, both Hasidic in origins, and they knew each other already at that point. What you have to understand, and this is something that my own research has taught me, following World War II, a lot of the survivors wound up in France. People wanted to get out of Germany as quickly as possible for obvious reasons. Jews went back to Poland and thought they would have a future there, and then there were the massacres in Poland where the Poles, Yimach Shmam V'Zichrom, killed survivors, ultimately by the hundreds. They killed, I write about it in the Suva era, so the Jews realized they had to get out of Poland, and as many as possible who couldn't get to America, couldn't get to Palestine, you remember the white paper, the British, what we were going through during that period, they went to France. And in France, there is no question, Elie Wiesel and Reb Menashe Klein bonded very strongly. And their relationship continues to the day that Reb Menashe Klein died. Elie Wiesel, when he won the Nobel Prize, as you recall, he came back to Israel. I happened to meet with him right when he came back to Israel, and I'm involved in charity work I was doing. And he gave at least half the prize money, if not more, to Reb Menashe Klein to build the shul in Ramat, which is dedicated in memory of Elie Wiesel's parents. Now, Reb Menashe Klein also had a very warm relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And if you go to the Lubavitcher websites, you'll be able to pick up Reb Menashe Klein and the endless stories about their relationship. The Rebbe gave one when he first met Reb Menashe Klein, and they first met in Brooklyn. And you got to remember, the Rebbe, as we know so well, had a photographic memory, and Kol Hashas Kulo was on his fingertips. So to meet someone like Reb Menashe Klein, who had Kol Hashas Kulo on his fingertips, was a wonderful moment for both of them. And the Rebbe gave an order to his Gabayim, whenever Rav Klein comes to see him, to usher him in immediately. He does not have to wait online. And they tell the story here in Tashmach. So Tashmach has to be in 1988, am I correct? Yeah, 1988. So when Reb Menashe Klein came to the Rebbe, Lenachem Avol, on the death of his wife, Chaya Mushke Shniasin, the Rebbe turned to him and said, "Everyone knows about your reputation, your Sfarim, Mishnah Halacha, Holech Lefanecha." And Rabbi Klein says to the Rebbe, "If it's true that I have a good reputation, then I have the right to request something from the Rebbe. And I plead with the Rebbe, work it out that Mashiach should be here already." And the Rebbe answers, "I yell all the time about Mashiach, but you're a posek, paskin, that Mashiach has to come." So Rav Menashe Klein promised the Rebbe, he will paskin that the Mashiach has to come. All right, that's a little bit too gedolei Yisrael. sparring back and forth, but there's no question that Reb Menashe Klein had a wonderful relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He greatly admired the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and you'll see that in his tshuva at times. And the reason he admired the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Reb Menashe Klein was in a position to do so is he came to America when he was still a young man. He assimilated America into his blood. He became a Kloisenberger Chassid when he came from the camps. And this is true about many, many people. I knew people who were far from Chassidut, but they were in the same death camp with the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And the Rebbe's Mesirat Nefesh, they became Kloisenberger Chassidim. And Reb Menashe Klein worked for the Kloisenberger Rebbe. That was his first job in America. He helped the Kloisenberger Rebbe. He helped them establish the yeshiva. He helped them establish the Chassidus. He worked in Jersey City. He was not a narrow individual. He was exposed to America. He knew what America was. And Reb Menashe Klein said about the Rebbe, and, you know, anyone who lived the era has to say it, when the Rebbe came to America a few years before Reb Menashe Klein, but he starts functioning in 1950, 1951, as we'll see tomorrow. So the Rebbe and Reb Menashe Klein both start functioning about the same time. There was nothing in America. Who was from? Who could ever dream that there'd be a poor report then that the only ones alive and kicking in America are Orthodox Jews? In 1950, they couldn't care less. Reform was all over the place. The conservative movement was growing by leaps and bounds. Then they write the tshuva, drive the shul on Shabbos, etc., etc. Everyone thought by the year 2000, there won't be an Orthodox Jew left in America. And take a look, Reb Menashe Klein looks at the Rebbe, what the Rebbe accomplished. And I have to tell you, this is halacha l'maisa for me. I had two terrible shaylot in America these past few weeks. I don't want to go into everything, but I'll give you an example. One little shayla came to me. We have had terrible, horrible scandals in the Torah world. So one kid left Yiddishkeit, he davened in the shul with the fraud, with Fraudel. I think he's in jail, Fraudel. God have mercy, but set up cameras in a mikvah to look at women. I mean, I can't even pronounce the words. So this kid gave up Yiddishkeit, so his mother came crying. But that story, leave for another time. Another kid who grew up here, had the best education, Rabbi Steinsaltz's high school, ailing, the army, kid was an officer, went in with a big kippah on his head, the best education. The kid is now on his way to America and reached the conclusion religion is a big phony, Yiddishkeit is a big phony, the rabbis are big phonies. This latest scandal here with the rabbi up north, Ezra Scheinberg, I mean, it's beyond comprehension how someone can be a big Talmud Chacham and be a million times worse, in my opinion, than Shabtai Tzvi. Just take kol ha-Torah kula and turn it into self-aggrandizement that you should do every sin under the books. Oh, God. So this kid here, Yiddishkeit. So his uncle, who's a dear Talmud of mine, asked me, he's going to try to get the kid to go to Shul Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You understand, Rosh? We're talking, he just got married. So he didn't want a rabbi at the wedding. His father-in-law, who's Sfardik, evidently Mesorati, told the kid, if I'm paying for the wedding, you are having a rabbi. So Baruch Hashem, they had a rabbi at the wedding. So they asked me, the uncle asked me, it's Riverdale. Where should I daven with this kid? I can go right wing, Morty Willig. I can go centrist, Rabbi Rosenblatt, my Talmud, right? You know the area. Or I can go left wing, Avi Weiss. I told my Talmud, his uncle, don't you dare go to any of those places. If the kid wants to daven, you take him to Chabad. You have Chabad in Riverdale? He said, yes. I said, you take him to Chabad. And this is exactly what Menashe Klein was overwhelmed by the Rebbe. Now, how do we know about his relationships with Eli Wiesel? And by the way, the Shtibbelei davened in Borough Park, in Kew Gardens Hills this summer, Chatam Seifer, the Rabbi Weizel Shul, he said there was a machlokes apoiskim, whether he's a nephew of Eli Weizel or a cousin. He's not alive anymore. The shul, it's an amazing thing. I saw he's dead already 30 years. I remember him when I stayed in Kugan's Hills last in 78-80, I davened there. I have good stories out of that shtibbel. So he's dead already 30 years. The cakes and cookies, am I right or wrong? Not that long, but they come in big packages from the bakery Thursday night. You come in to catch Mincha Mariv, Rabbi Weizel, Rabbi Weizel. And people told me he's dead so many years, but the shul is still known. It's his shul. So Eli Weizel wrote an autobiography, memoirs, All Rivers Run to the Sea. It's worth reading. It came out 20 years ago, but it's still very, very timely. So he writes, of course, what they went through and Buchenwald, and then he writes about France. It was a different landscape, more cheerful, more human. And then he says, you know, he was a frum kid. After the war, by the grace of God, blessed be his name, here I am in France, far away, alone. This morning I put on my tefillin, my own tefillin, for the first time in a long time. In other words, they gave the survivors pairs of tefillin, probably Vat Hatzalah, money, the joint. Menashe Klein, son and grandson of Rabbi Zavungva, both of us asked to be given essential books, the Bible, prayer books, a few Talmudic tractates. We were promised these, and they were duly provided, as was a study room where we could say morning and evening prayers. We held our first mincha service, and we all said Kaddish together, though we knew it well enough that collected Kaddish reminded us that we were all orphans. So you see where the relationship begins, and that's why I think it begins in France. And I'll continue in a moment, but I just want to interrupt with one contemporary thought, very important as well. I've said it before and I say it again, and it's very important to say it and let it be heard all over the world. We can't teach hatred, no matter what the Nazis did for us, and no matter, it's overwhelming, the memoirs, literature, and the memoir stories, and what the Nazis did. You can't teach hatred. We have to respect every human being. When they pick up a rock to throw, at that moment we have to shoot them. But al pi din, al pi hashkaf, al pi yahadut, we can't teach hatred. Every human being is created in the image of God. A little story. I have many I have a mazel tov. Our grandson got engaged Friday, which pushes me over the hill, meaning it's now the majority of my grandchildren will be married. So they came Friday to see us. We have a Baruch Hashem, nice young man, a wonderful young man and a wonderful young lady. So Baruch Hashem, God bless me, I have many grandchildren. So I have one grandson, very, very sensitive, and does chesed that's unbelievable. Thank God he's alive. You all know he was wounded in battle a year ago. And thank God the operation, everything was successful. So he goes to visit, he knows this kid, a grandson. Actually, the father was my student here in BMT, in this very building, the father. Or maybe it was in one of the earlier buildings of BMT. And the grandson is friendly with my grandson. And he goes to visit the grandfather who had come in Aliyah from Lawrence, a survivor. A man can't walk today, also crippled, old age, all that goes with it. So my grandson went to visit him yesterday. Chesed, my children, chesed, chesed, chesed. So he came to see me later on Shabbat. He was ibegarashed, overwhelmed. Why? Because the grandfather told him how God saved his life, how he survived. How did he survive? They were on a train heading to France, out of Germany, going into France, which is right next door to Germany. I was in France. I went and saw endless trucks with German license plates. So in Paris. So you're right. So at the border, the SS gets on the train and they pull off every Jew. And he this kid with his brother and his parents were sitting, shivering. You know, they're Jews. They're trying to get to France, running away. And right next to them, the whole trip, was sitting an officer in the German Air Force. And they reach the border, the SS goes through the car, goes through the train, and they pull off every last Jew, including this family. 1 minute after they pull them off, they hear shooting in front of the train, and the SS quickly run up front to see what's going on with the shooting. At that moment, the smuggler who they hired to get them to Paris, to get them to France, pulls the mother and father, the father back into the train, one person he pulls, and the German officer pulls the mother and the two children back onto the train. And the train already was moving. The SS had given the word they could move on. And the German officer tells the father when they cross the border, he says, now I can talk freely. I'm very upset what they're doing to you. They have no right to do this to the Jewish people. I can't do more than what I did, because if I speak out aloud, they'll put me in front of a firing squad. So forgive me that I can't do more, but at least I was able to pull you back into the train. And that's how his life was saved. Pshuto, mashma'o. So you see, what happened in France was very fascinating. And it did me good on page 113, it did me good to take up my studies again. Together with Menashe Klein, the leading of our group, and Kalman Kalikstein, a brilliant boy of Polish origins, I rededicated myself to the study of the sacred works. Spontaneously, without thinking about it, I recovered my religious fervor, perhaps as a way of closing the parentheses on my recent past. Most of all, I needed to find my way again, guided by one certainty. However much the world has changed, the Talmudic universe was still the same. No enemy could silence the disputes between Shammai and Hillel, Abaye and Rava. I just want to comment again after seeing and being told and asked, and so many kids leave Yiddishkeit, the best chinuch, the Haredi world, our world. You have to teach a kid, what's the word the Rav taught me? The romance of a Jew with his God, with Torah, with the Jewish people. These words are magnificent. When you learn Gemara, just think, you're back in the Beit Medrash of Abaya and Rava, of Shammai and Hillel. You're back 1,000+ years. And this same Beit Medrash will continue 1,000 years from now. You're part of a magnificent history, saga of the most wonderful people in the world. A kid should be happy to be a Jew. When you put on tefillin, your grandfather put on, your great, this enabled us to survive. This kept our bond. When you wrap the ritzuot around you, it's wrapping yourself to God, to Torah, to Jewish identity, to Jewish survival. I can't. And then, kid, well, it doesn't speak to me. I say, you should have, mitoch shelo lishma balishma. You know, you observe, you're going to see the rhythm of Torah life will wake you up. It'll open your eyes. And so much emotion we have to add to our teaching. It's not just shakla v'tayir, it's not just shas and poskim, but it's emotion, it's commitment, it's love. A few days later, I went into the director's office to find out whether my books, my friend Menashe and I had ordered, had come in. He happened to be on the phone. I didn't understand what he was saying, but I assumed he was dealing with our request because I heard him say my name several times. I waited politely until he finished, and then he asked my question in a mixture of German and Yiddish. He stared at me uncomprehendingly. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Who are you? I told him. And his face suddenly brightened. Oh, you're Wiesel? I'm glad you're here. That was a message from your sister. I froze. My sister, that's impossible. No, it's not. That was her on the phone. He didn't even know the name. He had two sisters. This is how we found out one sister survived. She'll be waiting for you in Paris tomorrow. And he writes about how he met his sister, how overjoyed he was, how the books came in, and he continues to study with Reb Menashe, the most accomplished resident Talmudist. Now, there were many people, many giants who survived. Among them, and this, if you'll ask anyone from France, research has been done, maybe more has to be done. There were people from the Litvische Welt who survived. One of them was Shoshani, and he was not just a great Talmud Chacham, a philosopher, and he taught. He was a charismatic individual. No one knew his real name. He went with the name Shoshani. And Menashe attended his courses for a while, but eventually gave up. Be careful, he warned me. This man wants to shake our faith. He scares me. Okay? And that's also a fascinating comment. You see, Eli Wiesel became friendly with, in America, he was with Professor Lieberman, with part of the right wing in the seminary crowd. He lived on the Upper West Side. He was friendly with all these people who were very open. He had no problem. But Reb Menashe Klein ultimately winds up in Borough Park in Brooklyn. There's a difference already in intellectual personality. And then he writes about Reb Menashe. Menashe emigrated to the United States, settled in Brooklyn, where he ultimately came a Rosh Yeshiva and one of the great halachic arbiters of his generation. Nevertheless, I continued to study with Shoshani. And then he describes when he gets to America. And remember, he was in France for quite a few years. He wrote in Hebrew for the Israeli newspapers. He was a reporter for Yediot. He finally gets to America, having tracked down Menashe Klein, my old friend from Buchenwald in France. I now saw him regularly. He looked older, but I could have picked him out from the crowd of 100 rabbis. I could not have forgotten his determined glance, his stately bearing, the way he leaned over a tractate of the Talmud. To this day, I see Menashe at least once a month, sometimes more often. We share a project to build a base medrash, house of study in Jerusalem, in my father's name. And here, let me end off. He quotes Reb Menashe. This is so important. I spoke about it actually in Lawrence in July on Shabbos, so it couldn't be recorded. Never give in, never give in. That had been his motto. He repeated over and over again that our people had seen other ordeals. Granted that this one was unique, the most terrible, but it was incumbent upon us to surmount it as our ancestors had surmounted theirs. They rebuilt their sanctuaries, reopened their schools, helped one another resist the wicked. May we be worthy of their strength and their faith. Otherwise, our enemies will be victorious. And I've said many times, and we've gone through terrible situations here. I just was at the Beit Olam, I believe it's the 12th Yahrzeit of Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum and his daughter Na'ava. As you know, they were murdered by Muslim murderers on Rehovei Mikrafayim after Na'ava had gone to mikveh in preparation for her wedding, which was to take place the next day. And I always said, I gave a eulogy in the Kollel, and it had a bit of an impact on people who face this dilemma in life. Medafkein vaita, we have to go further. You can't give our enemies a second victory. And that's Reb Menashe Klein, that's Eli Wiesel, that's the relationship, and that's just a few words on what I was able to put together biographical-wise on Reb Menashe Klein, who always signed his tshuvot, Reb Menashe HaKatan, Menashe HaKatan, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe said to him, you're not Menashe HaKatan, you're Menashe HaGadol. And let us begin with the first tshuva. And who do I have here? I have at least one chassid with a chassidish soul, Alex, sitting in front of me. Anyone else with a chassidish soul? Because a Litvak won't even understand what this is all about. And I know I come from a Litvisha background. And I know the Rav, when the Rav was, I told you more than once, you can hear it on tape, where the Rav is giving shir in Moria. And he's trying to figure out when the next shir will be. And you have the whole interruption of Aseret Yemei Teshuva and Erev Yom Kippur. And the Rav is, oh yeah, yeah, for you, I'll say it in English, but I'm hearing it in Yiddish. The Rav is saying, for you it'll be very hard, you're very busy, Erev Yom Kippur, you all go to mikveh. We don't have that custom in Brisk. You follow the Brisk of what is mikveh? Mikveh is a woman goes to mikveh. Mikveh is Tumah V'Tahara. Mikveh is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, right or wrong. When mikveh has a halachic basis, that's where mikveh plays a role. But the mikveh, what you speak about, going to mikveh on a total commitment on at a Shabbos basis, some go to mikveh on a daily basis, this, to the brisker way of thinking, mandecha shemei, where does it get off the ground? So this is a tshuva in 1966. He doesn't tell us the name. He says, Pitke Toivel Amalat Kvodo HaRav HaGon Kvod Shintif HaTov V'chulu Shlita. I don't know why. In this tshuva, they don't mention the name. The tshuva was written Motzoi Yom Kippur, 1966. And this person wants to know how important this mikveh. And he calls from a Hasidic sefer from the Papa Rav, Vayagid Yaakov, that there is nothing more important than going to mikveh before davening. And b'mashenagu Hasidim v'anshei maisa litvol b'chol yom, that you have to go to mikveh every day, and how important it is. And he wants to know that, is mikveh really that important? Now, let's just speak for one moment about the sources. All of you know the basic sources are Sugya and Brachot, the beginning on Daf Chaf Bei, Takanet Ezra. And what is Takanet Ezra about? The Gemara speaks for Hodatul Vanechel Nevenach to Vichtiv Batre, Yomashle Matlefne Shamlekach Bechorev, Malahalin Beheme Beyira Beretet Uvezia, Afkan Beheme Beyira Beretet Uvezia. That a person has to feel that he's standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a daily basis. When you feel you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a daily basis, you shiver. You shake, you are filled with awe. Ah, do we all feel that way? Do we all live that way? And all of you know, a male can have an admission, play tatzera, and Ezra wanted people to live on a high level, wanted people to feel the yira, the ema, the retat. You're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can you have thoughts of sex or women or attraction? And therefore Ezra instituted that if a man ever has a pleitat zera, shichmat zera, he has to go to mikveh. And that is Takanat Ezra. Baruch HaTor HaMelech HaLam Shakon Yemid Baro. That is Takanat Ezra. Now, it's a whole sugya in the Gemara. I need not tell you, this is one of the few takanot that the Jewish people found too hard. Because what does this takana mean? This takana means you have to go to mikveh daily. Why do you have to go to mikveh daily? Because it's embarrassing. A person's going to go to mikveh only if he had relations with his wife, or only if he had a mikra laila, to quote the Torah. It's embarrassing. So therefore, to avoid embarrassing yourself, a person would go to mikveh daily. Fine. People found it very hot. And ultimately, it fell under the rubric, of Ein Gozrin Gezeira Chal HaTzibur She'ein HaTzibur Yachol Lamod B'zeh. If Chazal made a Gezeira, made a Takana, and the people find it too hard, then we do not observe that Takana, that Gezeira. It is if it never took hold, and therefore is not binding. Give me another example. There's one more very famous example from the Sugya in Avodah Zarah, Shemen Akum. Originally, Chazal made the same gezeira that they made on Stam Yainim. What's wrong with wine? Wine, there's nothing that can be treif in wine. But wine can be used for Avodah Zarah. We all know in the church on Sunday morning what happens. So Chazal made a gezeira, you can't use stam yenam. The same gezeira was made, you can't use stam shemen. Now how come when I go to the Haredi stores there, Osharad, I go to Rami Levi, Haredi branch, and there you'll see olive oil imported from Spain with a badatz, with a two hechsherim, with three hechsherim. You'll see olive oil imported from Italy, right or wrong. No, because that gezeira didn't take hold. Wine took hold, Baruch Hashem. The Jews are big manufacturers of wine. My classmate, no, tell me who's the greatest expert in the world at this moment in time on the manufacture of wine in the medieval period. No? My classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Isn't that his brilliant book, Yainam, which I think they're working on an English translation today? The Jews got involved. They made wine. We lack for wine today. Alex, Israeli wines win gold stars. Lactosa wines, right or wrong. So wine, we lived with, we made, and wine is very, if I had my way, I would make a gezeira today, not just wine, whiskey, no drinking with Gentiles. In America today, they drink, they're friends, they're happy. What are they looking for? Why is the door being opened every second minute? Torah Shrag. All right, fine. I thought they're looking to see.
They didn't tell what room the teachers in.
They're looking to. All right, Poseidon, whatever. I only, you know, when they open the door like that, it's like they're giving a message. Rebbe, finish up already. Get out. We need the room. It's like, you know what I say? In my days, I never had a Rebbe who taught with a hat on. Today I see every Rebbe in the world, NYU, they're teaching with hats on. I can't believe my eyes. God, to me, when you put a hat on, it's a sign you're ready to leave the room. You follow? It's like you're bored of teaching. God forbid, bored of teaching. How can that be? You're giving over Torah Hashem to Nima. I mean, it's such a fascinating topic here with mikveh, with gezeira. I mean, it's a world of material. Think you can research every word I'm saying and come up with a kuntres of 118 pages. So, you see, shemen, it was too hard for the Jews to accept. So it disappeared. But tell me, did mikveh disappear? And what is the power of mikveh? In other words, a likvat, someone like my Rebbe, or I have to say, the Rebbe at least had a little chassidus in him, as we've seen, because of where he was raised, in Chaslovich. But you take someone like Avshol Lieberman, he was kulo halacha. The chassidus, the interpretations, the it was beyond him. He had no geschmack in it. He had no feel for it. I told you, Avram Yoshua Heschel, the Kapishnitz Rebbe, what was he, the Kapishnitz Rebbe's son, or a different name, was the Kapishnitz nephew. I think his brother became Kapishnitz, or his first cousin. I mean, he was related, Heschel, related to every Rishoner in the world, from the Rishoner dynasty. But at the seminary, Professor Lieberman, he said, I'm Aretz, what does he know? You understand? They were two totally different personalities. Ah, what happened to the seminary is beyond belief, but I shiver and I shake because I see it happening right before my eyes with an institution that has many of my students leading it. And Hashem Yirachem, what I saw in America, what I read, what I heard, I'm still shaking, I'm still shaking. What began in Riverdale and where it is at today, I'm absolutely shaking. And you can have good people, well-meaning people, but when you break the fence of halacha, you break it a little bit. Within 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you don't recognize what you have anymore. And this is, the seminary is the greatest example. By the way, they tell me their library was closed down. If anyone knows details, let me know. If you know where to get it on the internet, check out, Alex, check out JTS Library. They say they closed the library. Why? What are they doing with it? See if you can find out. But coming back here, the concept of mikvah goes way beyond the Takonet Ezra. And the way the Hasidim look at it, and many a Chabadnik has said this to me, a learned Chabadnik, yes, for someone like you, the Litvische Welt, you guys that have no emotion and no feeling, and pardon me, no real deep Yirat Shemayim like a Chassid has, that's the Chassid speaking, don't think I agree, but that's the Chassid speaking, for guys like you, you don't comprehend how important going to mikveh is. But even though Takanet Ezra was abolished, we're big enough to go to mikveh every day. And this is why Hasidim go to mikveh every day. Chabad, absolutely. It's like Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. You know what the Shulchan Aruch paskins? All right. For a guy like Rakefet, no one's going to say to me when I get to heaven, why didn't you put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? Baruch Hashem, I never missed a day. I never missed a day of Rashi Tefillin. But Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, that's for a chassid, a tzaddik. A chassid? We're on that level. Ah, for them already, mikveh became a lot more than just a formal halachic act. When Yomo goes to mikveh and comes out of the mikveh, hold you, give me another 2 minutes. When Yomo goes to mikveh and comes out of the mikveh, he's another person. He's a different person. Okay? It has an impact. Yomo, relax. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. The Rav once said a good word, I'll never forget. The Rav said, the literature for us, the world is Torah. You've heard that. Oh, what can I tell you? Over the years, I've spoken so much about what it means, Lasok with different Torah. So the Rav, but we forget. We forget. So the Rav said, no, for us, it's like going to mikveh. A chassid comes out of mikveh, he dries himself. He's no longer wet, but the purity, the tahara, remains. We may forget the Torah, but the tahara. But I want to go one step further before I come back to Rav Menashe Klein. Yes, what did you want to ask?
I was going
to
ask, so Rav was speaking about how the Vajra are very, very machmir about mikvah, but they must have gone slightly more mikvah about it, because a lot of Chabad, they live in certain areas where they maybe not be able to go to mikvah every day.
All I can tell you is, yes, they live in areas where their wives have to travel many, many miles to get to mikvah. Ultimately, they build a mikveh. A mikveh was built in Anchorage, Alaska, that students of mine paid for. So be aware. A mikveh in Anchorage, Alaska. It's a whole story, but it was built there. But a Chabadnik, Lachatchila, will go to mikveh every day. Ask Alex. You follow? Every day. And the Chabadnik I saw, obviously, a Maisa Nefesh to go to mikveh every day. Obviously, if you live in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and there's no mikveh yet, and your wife has to travel 3 hours to the nearest mikveh in a big city, I don't think they can go to mikveh every day. It's an impossibility. But they have Hasidim in general. They go Erev Shabbos. Then they're those who, you understand, they have a feeling for mikveh that's beyond the narrow halacha. When I'm going to be asked, I'm going to say, Ezra, they were mavatel the takana. What do you want out of me? I'm a good halachic Jew. Chabad, Hasidim, takes on a whole new comprehension. Tahara, holiness, purity. These are words that are beyond the narrow halacha. And I write in Washington, you know what I'm talking about? Remember I write in Washington about the Shabbat I spent in Chabad when I was in high school, and everyone's talking to Lubavitcher Rebbe, to Lubavitcher Rebbe. I wanted to see what was going on. So Shabbat morning, they say, we go to mikveh. I say, Shabbat, you go to mikveh? You can't go to mikveh. How can you bathe your whole body? How do you dry out? By the time I'm arguing with them, I'm stripped naked and I'm pushed into the mikveh. You follow? To them, it's a different world. They're even chuvet. If someone has to go to mikvah Yom Kippur, mikre laila, can he go to mikvah Yom Kippur? You understand? The litvisher, there'd be a hole in the ceiling. What kind of crazy question is that? It's bathing yourself. No, they view it as tahara. It's an open question. I'm not paskening. But the fact that they can ask the question shows you already a different attitude. Yes?
Last year with Rabbi Sofati.
And what did Chavos Chaim say?
He held that you could go to the mikvah on Shabbat morning even if you had not had an emission because it's Tosefet Tahara.
I understand. I'm going to give you an unbelievable source
here.
I'm going to give you a source and then you're going to see what he says in the Tshuva. You'll see. And you'll see the story he tells. That's what makes him so fascinating. See, Rav Moshe's Tshuva, you're not going to get stories in them. He doesn't digress. Rav Ovadia, you'll get a world, you know the difference. I've taught this somebody, you know, I've gone into great detail. I've spent a few years on it, the difference in how poskim operate. But you're not going to digress with the Hasidic overtone. You'll see Rav Menashe, he's an amazing, you'll see, it'll take us a few years, but you'll understand when I say he's open-minded and narrow-minded at the same time. He has his background, and he remains loyal to his background. On the other hand, there's such open-mindedness, and he understands the world in which we live. Wonderful. He has a son who's in Ramat, the Rav of the Shul, has a son in Borough Park who runs that shul. Now, the mikveh goes even further. Now we come to Yom Kippur. Hilchos Yom Kippur, Orech Chaim, I'm quoting now an exoteric source, not esoteric, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Tav Resh Vav, I'm quoting Siman Dalet. Yachol litbol v'lilkot matay sheyrit yitzer rak she'akodem alayla ve'enam avareich al hatfila. So you see, the Shulchan Aruch writes about the custom that people took malkot, gave malkot on Erev Yom Kippur. You don't see it today. And Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, they're eyewitnesses. They would lay down and bend over and someone would give them malkut. And you go to mikveh, but you have to be sure to go before nightfall. And you don't say a bracha on this tefillah. All right? And this is paskened in the Shulchan Aruch. Look into the Magen Avraham. What's going on here? Why do you have mikveh? V'yesh omrim shechatam de tefila mishum tshuva. That the reason we go to mikveh in Erev Yom Kippur, that this is part of the process of tshuva. That simply the water, the memsa, the mikveh, the tahara, it elevates us. It's part of showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We want to be pure. We want to come back to the source. We want to purify our souls. Dahar, the Magen Avraham continues, Afilu Naremu Betulat, Shechein B'nei Mitzvat Tavlat. It's nothing to do with seminal admission. In his time, even young boys and young girls went to mikvah. Vafilu misha tabal be'erev Rosh Hashanah v'lo rakeri yagza v'yitbo. Wow. So you see, they go way beyond the Gemara. The Gemara begins, misha rakeri, that people shouldn't be sexual fiends. That people shouldn't be, I'm quoting the Gemara in Ashlein Mitzvim, they shouldn't be like chickens with their wives, always having sexual relations. This goes way beyond the Gemara. The Magen Avraham, you're not dealing here with esoteric sources. You're dealing here with the heart of Torah Baal Peh. The Magen Avraham speaks in terms of purity, tshuva, the mikvah, the experience. It changes the human being. Fine. I can go even further. Bahatzlacha. Next week I'll take names and everything, beer. And there's room for more people to come to class. I don't want it said that the more people who listen across the world, the less people who come and sit in front of me. So you're invited to chavre itlay. But you see what the mikvah takes on, how important it is. Okay? And here this person is asking him, how should we approach it? And they quote Reb Yisachar Dov Mibelz. That's for whom the present Belzer Rebbe is named. You know what I'm talking about? This was his, let me just figure it out, his great-grandfather, if I'm not mistaken. Reb Yisachar Dov Mibelz. We're talking about he who was Gerer Rebbe at the turn of the last century. The man who was the father of Arla Bells of Rababala Rokach. But those of you with Bell's blood in you, when you hear the name, you shiver, you shake. And they called Rabbi Yisachar Dov Shehevi Raya. He said you have to go to mikvah. Why every day? Quoted the Gemara on Shabbos. Shuv Yom Echad Lifnei Mitatcha. Person should do tshuva one day before he dies. Gentlemen, can anyone tell me the date on which they will die? Even David HaMelech, remember the Gemara in Shabbos, pleaded with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All he found out it would be in a Shabbat. No one knows. We don't know the day. No, Shuv Yom Echad. And if mikvah, if the Magen Avraham is right, and going to mikvah is tshuva, then you have to go to mikveh every day. Okay? And that's from Rabbi Yisachar Dov, the Belzer Rebbe, the father of Rabbi Aralami Belz. Wow. Now, let me just think. Rabbi Arala had a younger brother, Rabbi Mordechai, and Rabbi Mordechai survived, and Rabbi Mordechai remarried, and Rabbi Mordechai had children, a son and a daughter. And that son, born in 1948, is the present Belzer Rebbe. So, Rabbi Yisachar Dov, Rabbi Mordechai, if I'm correct then, and then the present Rebbe named after his great uncle, so it's great uncle or grandfather. Anyway, check it out. I believe it's then a grandfather, not a great-grandfather, but if you can check it out and correct me, I'll be very happy. And here, Rabbi Nasha Klein goes crazy with joy that what you say from the Belzer Rebbe is very, very important. It's beautiful. It's inspiring. Tshuva, the Magen Avraham, the Belzer Rebbe. But if this is the case, Rabbi Asher Klein says, wait a minute, we're doing it wrong. Alex, when do you go to mikveh? I met you coming back from the mikveh in the morning. Am I right or wrong? How do you go to mikveh in the morning? All the Hasidim go in the morning. I davened in there was a young Israel, Chabad was all over South Florida, and there was in Sunny Isles, and every morning the Chabad Rav, whose shul it was, would come in with a towel wet from the mikveh. Wait a minute. The morning you go to mikveh? If mikveh is tshuva, if the Magen Avraham is right, if Rabbi Yisachar Dov Rokach, the Belzer Rebbe is right, you have to go to mikveh before you go to sleep. When do you make a cheshbon and nefesh? When do you say kriyat shma al hamita? When do you say I forgive everyone who sinned against me? The Musar Sfarim all speak in terms at night. You make a cheshbon and nefesh, what you did today, right, wrong, balance it up. He says, if this is the case, then you should go to mikveh. And he raises the question very, very seriously. And if this is the case, the Mishnah Halachot, Rabbi Menashe Klein says, if it's a question of tshuva, then why only one time a day? A person should go whenever he feels the inspiration. I have to do better. I have to climb the ladder. B'chol rega tzarich tshuva v'lama baboka dafka kol dem. So it's a very fascinating question, and you see how seriously he takes the question of mikveh, how much it means, even though the Takanet Ezra is no longer with us. And I'll end off. We're not finished with the tshuva. I show you that. I have to show you something next week that's overwhelmingly inspiring. But he says, and here you come to reality, that yes, it's a very good question, but there's a certain reality of life. If Ezra was mevatel the takaner, it shows that it's very difficult for a person to go to mikveh every day. Alach ad kama v'kama to go to mikveh more than once a day, to go to mikveh at night. The nature of the human being is that at night you're tired. You understand, I know for me, I can't talk on the phone after 9:30 already. By 10 o'clock, I'm asleep. All right, that's the nature of the human being. You're tired at night. It's simply very difficult to have that lifestyle that you're going to run away from the house and go to mikveh at night. But in the morning, when you're alert, you're awake, the day is starting, and you can work it into your schedule, that's why people go to mikveh in the morning. But ein hachi nami, he says, it's a beautiful thought that to go to mikveh whenever you can, v'hatovel kodesh yomrulo tacharhu u'mekabel scha min hatorah al zeh. So Rabbi Menashe Klein, stressing the beauty, the consequences of going to mikveh, 100%. The Magen Avraham, tshuva, it's a lot more than just we are good Jews, we can live with Takanet Ezra. For us, it's not nullified, it's not canceled. This is the way he begins. We'll pick up exactly here next week. Be'ezrat HaNatein L'Yov Koach. So what have we done so far today? Hold the question. Just let me review. All right, ask the question. Yomo.
The JTS library will be reopening on September 1st. It was just closed for the August.
So why did they make everyone said that it's in New
they're
Jersey?
They're opening it up in a different place, and they're moving a lot of it to storage. You're going to have to pay to bring it out of storage.
Do me a favor, send me the release. Let me look at it. So I see what's... I have that, one of the most parts that are most widely quoted from Washington is my description of when I went into JTS, into the library, how I met Reb Moshe Bick there, remember? So everyone relates, so, oh, you Rebbe, and you know what's happening, so all right, let's see. All right, so let me reiterate. What did we do today? First of all, we finished our Eruvin, and it's a very interesting comment of the Mark Shapiro, the words Borough Park are missing. And the fact that the words Borough Park are missing says a world. And whoever played with the text is foolish, because once it's been published once, then anyone can go back and see the original and make the comparison. And one has to be intellectually honest. If you're not intellectually honest, you create a situation where Lo Aleinu, that student of mine, one of my great heartaches, such a promising, brilliant youngster, and when I contacted him, all I got back was, "Dear Rebbe, nice to hear from you," but basically what he said was, "Go fly a kite and don't bother me." So it hurts. But you, and I don't say that was the only thing that led him off the path, but it certainly started the downhill slide. I remember the way he reacted to our Sameach. If they're lying about that point, then they're lying about everything. And Kol HaTorah Kula is one big farce. Quote, end quote. And I heard it this summer in context with Lo Aleinu, the scandals we have. It breaks my heart. And what can I say? It's indefensible, and yet you have to look at the Rebbeim who are honest and good and dedicated and breathe Torah air and let them be your inspiration. Then we spoke about Reb Menashe Klein, how I came to Reb Menashe Klein. We spoke about his 18 volumes of Mishnah Halachot, and what a prolific individual, what a fascinating individual. His relationship with Eli Wiesel, and the first Shiva that we picked up was, of course, this question with going to mikveh every day, how important is it, and how Hasidim view it. And out of this tshuva, you'll see, you get a whole inspiration and insight that is lacking in the non-Hasidic world. Okay, now the freebies. I hope there are people who are interested. This is for Yitz Rubin. He's not here. I'll hold on to it. Anyone interested, I gave Yomo a copy of this morning. Anyone interested in Gematria, this proves through Gematria that Mashiach is coming this very year. Am I happy about such pamphlets? Absolutely not, because if Mashiach doesn't come, we have a problem, but it's fascinating what they can do. Now, is there someone in the colon named Dorfman? Last name.
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Give him this. I met him. And it's all about Dorfman's in Israel. I wonder if he's related. This is a very interesting article on the Pooh Report and the orthodox analysis of the Pooh Report, the orthodox side. Very, very interesting. And I'll relate to this when everyone asks my opinion on certain topics. I'll get to a press conference down the line if I have enough students.
Is that the article on Mosaic?
This article is from the Pooh Research Center, Religion and Public Life, a further analysis of the 2013 survey of U.S. Jews. And according to this article, the Haredim, or the Yeshivish Hasidic world, are two-thirds of the Orthodox Jews in the United States. This is a review of Mark Shapiro's new book that we just quoted. This is, again, some of the Rabbanim today are coming out against the prenuptial agreement of the Rabbinical Council of America, Rabbi Morty Willig. Why they're coming out against it bothers me, because halakhically I don't see a problem with it. This is a very interesting article, Rabbi Lichtenstein and the Haredi World. This is Yeshiva College and Stern College, 50 years celebration, and they had the celebration here. Fascinating from the point of view of history, who's there and what became of them. And finally, if you're going to teach Torah in Israel, Midei Chodesh B'Chodesh, when you deal with youngsters, elementary school, high school level, gives you 101 different things to play with them, inspire them encourage them and supplement and complement their education. Tomorrow at 9:05, we pick up exactly where we left off. I would not miss tomorrow's lecture, where we continue with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, for all the rice that is now being consumed in Japan, along with the sushi. Until we meet again, in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Thank you very much. You take whatever you want. Steve, thank you. Dick, you'll take it apart?
Yeah.
Very good, sure. I was just wondering about, going back to Mark Shapiro.
What, I can't tell, what are you?
Going back to Mark Shapiro.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does he fit into the Orthodox world? Because
he's left of center.